This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, horse people. This is Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for February 2nd, 2016, episode 1351.
Oh my God, it's Tuesday.
It's top-class show jumping at the very best.
Every horse is different, and you've got to be able to understand and read each different horse.
Remember, we're looking for those clears in this round to go forward to the jump-off.
You can't ask for anything more. It's just pure theatre.
Well, greetings, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. And on today's Tuesday in the Jumper Ring, we are going to enjoy a piping hot bran mash of Emily's previously aired fun and informative interviews with a veritable masterclass of guests from the jumper world, featuring Cliff Schott Jr., Jimmy Fairclaw, John Manning, Bob Crandall, and Amanda Flint. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Well, next up, we have somebody who has to do all that stuff. So why don't you introduce
Amanda? Yes, we do. We have a real live professional rider here. This is one of our equestrian riders, a fantastic Grand Prix rider, Amanda Flint. She has been so kind to share a few minutes with us this morning and provide our training tip, our show jumping training tip. Amanda specializes in young horses all the way up through the Grand Prix level, and she herself is showing in the Saugerties Million on a very cool horse named Superbad. Amanda, are you here?
Yes.
Thank you for joining us. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
Am I right? Are you riding Superbad?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have our little young.
Okay. Because he's in great form. I just saw you. Was it in the last Sunday Grand Prix here? You just had one time fault.
Yeah, we managed to do three in a row with one time fault, which is actually just fine.
Oh, I know you're bummed, but that's still good.
Yeah, no, he's perfectly fine. Out of the last six Grand Prix, he won two and then had three time faults in the other, so it's more than fine.
Yeah, because you were cleaning up in Ocala. You won tons in Ocala and then on your route back up here. So, you're definitely still on your clear round streak. Time faults are time faults.
Yeah, and sometimes, you never know how the jump off goes anyway, and you saved your horse.
Totally. I know it's the money, but you know what? You're putting in clean rounds, and that is a very cool horse. Now, how old is he?
He's 10 this year.
Okay.
So he's finally growing up a little bit. We've been dealing with him for quite a while. So
you had him as a young horse, right?
We got him the end of his five-year-old year. Basically, he only showed once, and then we started showing him when he was six.
Wow. So. Well, he's cool. You guys got to check it out on the live stream. Superbad, Amanda Flint. So, all right, so you got our training tip. What do you have for us?
One of my new exercises I kind of came up with, and I feel like really helps the canter a lot, is I do a lot with ground poles, and as you said, I do a lot of young horses. I like to set up five poles in a row. The middle three are canter bounces, so 9 feet apart. And then between those three poles to each other pole, there's 45 feet. So you basically have a short four, bounce, bounce, short four, or it can be three, bounce, bounce, three, or, four, bounce, bounce, three. You can mix it up. I feel like instead of just normally we have two poles up and change the striding, the middle bounces really make sure that you have to have the canter correct instead of just getting there with nothing or the horse behind your leg or too far forward or anything. I find it really helps with the quality of the canter and the rideability. down.
Oh yeah, that's really great because I didn't know what your training tip was going to be, but as we had discussed last episode, I think it was, we were talking about poles and how important those are as a step a day or a session in your training, because it's not all the jumping. You can get a lot done. Wouldn't you say you can really work that rideability and work the position work over poles with less wear and tear?
Oh, yeah, something you can do every day. And then I teach a lot of, I'm starting to teach a lot more eventers as it's turning out, and it's surprising how difficult some of the people find this exercise, too. A lot of the horses are fine, but it's just a good check to make sure that you actually have the horse coming through from behind and lighten your hand, because it simply doesn't work another way.
So. Interesting. Yeah, because do you find, like, your riders, maybe not the horses necessarily, but the riders sort of evaluate the pole and go through the same behaviors?
Correct. And a lot of riders just go and they take whatever first distance they see, where this exercise right. really makes you decide what you want and create what you want before you get there.
I start
with just having them go on a little bit of a diagonal just to do the bounce poles and then add one of the lines at a time. But it really is something that I figured out that improves everyone and gets the horses actually going straight, because you have five in a row, which is not something they normally practice over. Like I said, they normally just practice over two poles.
Okay, so you would start for, if you set up that exercise in your arena, mm-hmm. and then you've done your flat work, so when you're coming to it the very first time, you would kind of roll back and do the three bounce rails?
Yeah, just the three bounce rails, a little angle once off of each lead, and then start coming in on the straight line, do a four to the bounces, and then probably try a four the first time. Most of them do three and a half on the way out to the second line. And do that back and forth till it gets correct, and then do four bounces, and then three, turn around and do that back and forth a couple times. And then the most advanced and most difficult, obviously, is the three bounces to a four. I found that the three bounce three is actually also difficult as well, because the stride is so big, and then they have to collect and then make it big again. But for the rider problem, the three bounce four is actually... seems to be the most productive.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's a great exercise, because I'm imagining riding it myself, that coming out of those bounces and trying to get that four, I would probably just pull on the reins without my leg and trot.
Right.
Let me see how I would screw it up.
Three and a half until they get it right. But the 45 feet is really the key distance I found for that exercise as well, and not just setting it on a direct three or a direct four. So like a little bit of a three and a half seems to work the best for that, for the purpose of the exercise.
That's a really good one. So now would you classify that, obviously that's a pole work exercise, it's a flat work exercise. Would you do that beginning of the week, or would you do that even at the horse show?
I had to set up all the time, and I find for instance, the last week we were at Saugerties 3 weeks. It was a great thing to do on Tuesdays when, you know, you don't really want to jump your horse because you just showed all weekend, but it still gets them thinking they're fresh from having Monday off. It still gets them thinking about the jumping with the flat work in it combined.
Nice.
And when I have people ship in for lessons, we kind of start with that just to see where they're at and how their eye works and their lesson of their rideability with their horses.
Do you find that that's a good exercise even for like a novice rider to come in?
Oh,
they
anybody can
handle
can
that.
It.
Yeah,
anybody can do it. The novice riders, I tend to just ask them to do the four bounce four. It's usually hard enough to just steer over five poles in a row and keep it together.
Yeah, yeah.
But anybody can do it, and even they can do it at the trot, too.
You could get the feel. Now, I love the bounces. I'm so glad that you brought that up. And then with the pole work, it just adds a very accessible way to get started with those, because for those of you that don't know exactly the footage, the 9 foot qualifies it as a bounce there. You've got three. It's people do use them. They use them with poles and up in the jumps, but it stimulates that sort of rocking horse motion that moves your angles as the rider, wouldn't you say? Like stimulates like a jumping position, what your
Correct.
Ready position needs to
Correct.
Be. And it, wherever you fall astray in those bounces is kind of where you'll go astray on course as well. It exposes your, you know, inklings as a rider.
Exactly. If you do not have the horse where it should be, with, you know, up in front of your leg and kind of waiting to go forward and waiting to go to slow down, it really doesn't work. They really have to have their hind end underneath them to do it correctly.
Yep. Yeah, which then is so nice. I love how you have those poles there, which then determines your rhythm, because jumping and all of it, it's all about rhythm and balance. And that exercise, yeah, it forces that. I love it. I've never done that before.
Okay.
Very. I'm going to do it, Amanda, which on my mom's horse. I'm going to pull my mom's horse over your ball exercise. Yes. We'll let you know how it goes.
Okay.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. You guys check it out. Amanda Flint, super bad. She's killing it out there. Well, hopefully we'll catch up with you after the million.
Okay, sounds good.
But anyways, okay, so we'll get to it so we don't run out of time. So, Bob, you have no doubt brought us a training tip.
Yep. I was sort of mentioning it to you a little bit last night. There's a exercise that I like to set up, and it's pretty universal. Like, you can use it for young horses, older horses, to kind of tune up a little bit with the horses for certain situations. You can use it for beginner kids, advanced kids, and so on. And it's really pretty simple. And I always start with really poles on the ground, and it's a set of poles to a 48 feet to a little bounce with poles to another 48 feet to another set of poles. And what you do is you sort of get the young horses or the beginners comfortable through it. And it's set so that you can do it in different striding. And at 48 to 10 to 48, you can very comfortably do it in 4 to a bounce to 4. You can do it in 3 to a bounce to a 3. And you can then vary it to, say, a 3 to a bounce to a 4 or a 4 to a bounce to a 3. You know, you can vary it in all different situations. And it's really, really helpful. It gets them focused. It's a comfortable situation where they are, it's just preset. You can't make a big mistake. That's also something, yeah, like the kids can do on their own with just poles, but you can raise it. And I don't ever have to get it that big, but you can certainly raise it and then move it out a little bit here and there, adjust it for your horse's stride. But it's a very big confidence builder.
Oh, well, that's cool. So sometimes you put those poles with standards and then you put them up a bit, like Cavaletti,
yeah,
kind of.
Yeah.
Wow,
definitely.
I like that a
really
lot.
Yeah, I actually really set it vertical. 4 verticals is really all it takes, and with ground poles on each side. And it's but with the beginners or the very young horses, the poles on the ground introduces it to them. And once they get that rhythm set, it's so simple to raise it and change it and move it around and ask for different striding. And it's really effective.
Oh, yeah, it sounds, I like that, because that's kind of, I mean, whether you're dealing with green horses or green riders or both, or you're just even ourselves, you're coming back after a week off or a couple of days off, just want to get sharp again. That's kind of like, don't you feel like that's sort of the question all the time? You're like, okay, like I need to, you know, tighten this up and get the pressure of the show ring and the courses, but kind of without doing the show ring and the courses.
Yeah, it's sort of an automatic exercise. It really tunes the horses, because they have to really focus on it. Or they, you know, they're going to bump a pole or whatever. And it really teaches the riders to hold their body and to how to adjust to lengthen the stride or shorten the stride. And it gets a little complicated when you put it up a little bit more and you ask for a, you know, a 3 to a bounce and then reel in 4 or vice versa. You know, it's very comfortable in 4 bumps. Yeah, it's effective.
It sounds effective. Effective is a very nice word to use.
When Bob said that, I found myself sitting back. I had to sit back when he said that. I went, oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
this is an exercise. Bob is bringing it. He is going to school these girls.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I like that a lot.
You.
Yeah, right? You fall right off. Well, so,
sure.
Like, that's the thing, is it also really schools. We had, I think it was Amanda Flint was on a few episodes earlier. Somebody was talking about bounces. And just how that really helps, yes, with your horse's techniques through the exercise, their balance, their bascule over the jump. But then for sure, oh my gosh, for the rider, it just puts you, or corrects you rather, when you get out of place. So, I mean, this exercise is like the master's course, because you've got to negotiate those bounce rails off of either a move up or the collection, which most likely we hope you have determined to do before you hit that first pole, right?
Absolutely. And the best part about it is you can't get in that much trouble with it, even if you make a little mistake in or out. You know, you can still make it up in between and adjust it and fix it. The striding set so that it's pretty uncomplicated whether you're lengthening or shortening.
It's nice. I really like that one a lot. So that's something, would you prescribe that just, I mean, that's like a good training exercise for hunters, jumpers, ponies, amateurs, yeah, for everybody, right?
Yeah.
Very nice.
I actually have it set almost all the time because it's so good for any level horse, any level rider. And you can actually stretch the whole thing out in different striding and things too, but I like that. I like the 48-10-48 because it's pretty precise and you have to be pretty accurate.
Yeah, no, that's good. Well, that's it. 48-10-48. You guys set it up, work those ponies, give us your feedback.
So far from winter, the grass is green. Hard to imagine that we will need to feed the horses so slick and round, but they're gonna need it when snow's on the ground. Hay in time, hay in time, making hay while the sun shines. Sweating bullets, I swear it's 99. Calling all your favorites, cause it's haying time. So call up your family, call all your friends, and we'll drink a cold one when the day ends. And when we stack that final bale, we'll celebrate and know we earned that ale. Hay in time, making hay while the sun shines. Sweating bullets, I swear it's 99. Calling all your favors, cause it's hay in time. If you are a farmer, you know it won't make you rich. It's hard work, that's no lie. But the satisfaction at the end of days like this, no amount of money can buy. Sweating bullets, I swear it's 99. Call up all the neighbors, the givers and the takers, calling all your favors, cause it's haying time.
Okay, we have one of my faves, John Manning, is here with our training tip. He is a course designer and trainer. John, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, thanks for joining us, taking the time. I know you're really busy. I've been on your Facebook. I see you are in California. Is that right?
I just got back.
Cool. Were you judging or building or what was going on?
For me, the way I think of it is a horse has two groups of muscles, thrusting muscles and lifting muscles. The lifting muscles are the harder ones to develop.
Oh, I like your style. Awesome. Anyways, okay, so we are jam-packed. So no doubt you have an amazing training tip for us. So what do you have?
Well, I have the design of a gymnastic that I don't see very often. But it's based on the idea of You know, I think for me, the way I think of it is a horse has two groups of muscles, thrusting muscles and lifting muscles. The lifting muscles are the harder ones to develop. I think lateral work is the basis for most of the development, but there is a jumping exercise that I think strikes right at the heart of developing those muscles and allows you to watch the horse and practice. You know, that's what gymnastics are. And what it is a series of bounces. And one of the reasons you probably don't see it very often is because it requires a fair amount of standards and rails, but I believe it's worth it to set it up once in a while. You know, usually when I do it, I start with cross rails and I'll put three bounces in a row. I think for people that aren't that familiar with gymnastics, there are probably three measurements that you ought to keep in mind. The first one is the length of a bounce, which could be between 8 and 12 feet. The second one is the length of a one stride, which could be 18 to 24 feet. And the third one would be the length of a two stride, which I believe would be 30 to 35 feet. So if you can remember those distances, you'd start out with a cross rail to maybe a small vertical at 8 feet. The second element would be another bounce stride, which I'd make to 9 feet, but I'd make it an oxer. So in the beginning, you make it a cross rail oxer. Then you go to another bounce, which would be, you know, add another foot, say 10 feet, to your second oxer. And so there you have three bounce strides in a row, two of them being oxers. There are four elements with three bounce strides in between. The next one would be a one stride, and I would make that 19 feet to your third oxer. And then I follow that up with a two stride to a vertical. So what you would see, and the two stride, I would start out at around 32 feet. You know, it requires somebody on the ground to watch the horse go to make sure it's comfortable. You're not trying to shorten or lengthen the horse's stride. You're trying to get him to practice rocking back and pushing up. When you use the oxers, they not only have to rock back, but they have to round over the jump. If it's just a vertical, the effort isn't quite as extraordinary. The oxers can start to get widened quite a bit, and it requires you to adjust the entire gymnastic as you do that because the oxers are in the middle of it, and you don't want to change the dimensions between the two elements. So you build it and adjust it as you can, you know, to make the horse feel comfortable. And by the end, the vertical could be, you know, a meter 10, meter 20 even. And what you're trying to teach the horse to do, like I said, is to rock back, push off. And hopefully by the end, you give him those nice two strides, comfortable, and you'll see how well he can handle a tall vertical. And I've had great results with it. And almost any horse can do it that has any experience with gymnastics. And it really gives them that practice. There are four bounces in there, and it really gives them the idea.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And with the oxers to the vertical, that is unique.
Yeah, the oxers, I think, are the key, especially in the bounce part, so they're not just rocking back, they're really pushing off and
stretching, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. And so would you recommend this is a cantering exercise, is that right?
No, I would trot in just to keep it slow going and comfortable.
Okay.
If you wanted to canter in, then you would probably start with the 12 feet and add a foot as you went.
Okay, so for trotting, then we keep it all at that same dimensions. And so would you recommend maybe starting like with the poles, just where the standards are, just ease them in the first couple times, or start with just cross rails, or how would you break it down into its smallest form?
I guess I would start with two cross rails, just make sure they got the idea of the bounce, because you don't want them to mistake it for trying to stick a stride in there. And then maybe just lay rails on the ground for the third one. And they get the idea pretty quick. And with the repetition of the bounces, you can start to really see in practice, they get the idea, and you're concentrating on that, those muscles that make them not only rock back, but they have to get a little bit quick with their hind feet, and you kind of need that to get that power.
Yeah, totally, because that's, I love bounces. I build them all the time, but that's sort of, that is one thing that you see, you know, okay, you keep doing the bounces. Yeah, they're up and down, and they're working the stifles and the hocks and everything, but there isn't really that, like, you know, stretching of the rib cage. They're not really going through the whole motion of the stretch of the jump, and maybe even cutting down a little bit at times. They don't have to really push off behind. So that with the oxers, I mean, that really, that will stretch them out, but in a controlled exercise there with its, what did you say, 8 feet for the first one?
8 feet for the first one, and then you just add, and like you're saying, you want to stand there on the side, somebody that has a decent eye for what you're trying to accomplish, and make it comfortable, because you're not trying, like I said, to punish them or, you know, but you brought up a point that I think is important, and that is at the end, you're given that one stride and that two stride. It's almost like a reward, because you don't want to keep everything just the same in a way that makes them bored or thinks, you know, give them the idea that they're being punished or something.
Yep. Yeah, you kind of open it up. And then, you know, that's kind of what the show ring essentially is the place that we see, okay, has our training and balance work stuck? If you're doing a bunch of courses, a bunch of speed classes, you know, your horses get flat, the distances get longer, the rails start coming down. So the gymnastics are to kind of tighten it all back up, get the balance back on the hocks. But yeah, I mean, you need to also have an opportunity to see, well, is my horse holding his balance? So by having that two stride, you open it back up a little bit, and hopefully your homework at the beginning of that exercise stuck, it looks like.
Right. And like you're saying, I think for a course designer, you know, you have to have elements of both. I've been told sometimes you try to get clever with an equitation course, and it ends up being, I've heard the expression, too boxy, where they're just landing, turning, and there's never any point where the horse can pause, you know, open his stride up a little bit and show a different side of his talent. So you're trying to mix the two up, I think.
Yeah, that's perfect. I love that exercise. So John is a credentialed course designer, so we are hoping to get him back on a future episode and do a segment on course design. So this is sort of your little tidbit to introduce you to John. He knows what he's talking about, as you can see. Very fun. Thanks for joining us, John.
Hey, well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. This is good stuff you're doing here.
It's great. It's so fun. It's really, it makes it all really exciting to have you guys on and bring your expertise and share. I mean, these are great exercises that I've never even heard of that one. That's a good one. I love it.
All right. Well, thanks
Very
for
cool.
having me, Emily.
Okay. We'll
thanks,
have you back Jen. On another episode. Thanks, John. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Hi, Fiona Crawford here. And I'm an official Horse Radio Network auditor. I'm a horse photographer based in the UK, and when I'm editing my images, I listen to the vast selection of great programmes provided by the Horse Radio Network. Both informative and really entertaining, I think it's worth a few dollars or pounds of anyone's money. Just go to horseradionetwork.com and click on the banner, and for as little as a dollar a month, you too can become an official Horse Radio Network auditor.
Excited about this. We have none other than Jimmy Fairclough, top rider, trainer, dealer, shopper, always got great horses for sale, riding in the Young Jumpers most recently, really tearing it up out there. He is bringing us our training horse show tip. Welcome to the show, Jimmy.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
Yay. So glad this worked out.
Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it. And one thing that I learned from a great horseman, Frank Chapeau, is developing a natural eye for the horses. Now, by natural eye, I mean that the horse is judging the distances on their own. And I never truly understood it or really respected it until I worked with Frank hand in hand on developing his young horses. I came straight from the school of thought where in Europe, you force a horse into this frame, you know, the frame in the picture that looks beautiful, but beneath that facade, it is an absolute freight train almost a nightmare, if you will, of battling between leg and hand and forcing the horse's stride at all times to be always calculated, always forced, and always to a distance that the rider dictates.
Okay, maybe this is, you're already showing and you've got a track record of doing it the manufactured way. How does somebody sort of kindly to the animal start switching it up on them and asking them to be a partner?
Well, that's a good question, because it's a very, very fine line between doing too little and too much. And one thing that Frank always had me do, and one thing that I love doing, is that you find a distance with a horse and you don't want to lie to it. You don't want to, fool it in any way. You get to the distance and you softening at the base. One thing I really drill on all of my students is self-carriage and letting the horse soften and carry themselves to the base. Even if you know you're going to have a rail at home, you soften to the base, you allow them to get there, and you show them deep distances, you show them long distances, and you try to gradually build from the manufactured frame, the manufactured distance, and then try to build from there. Like I say, 3 strides out, I will have my distance. And then for a young one, say a 5-year-old that likes to punch out the front rail, 3 strides away, I will totally abandon it and let it get there. Nothing big, nothing square, nothing scary. Let them get there. Let them judge that. As they start to develop, not every horse is naturally that careful enough, but as they start to develop that respect for the rail and saying, oh, whoa, wait here. He's not going to help me for that distance. I need to start to help myself. It's a very fine progression. It takes some time to develop the feeling. And I'm not saying that you need to trap them or you need to set up the lines and gauging the different distances in a line. I feel it can be done simply on a single fence in itself. And, usually I use a little bit more bit than what is necessary. And I will take a nice half halt when I'm going to the fence. I have found my distance. And then I start to soften on the horses. I will occasionally start to press if the distance is a little deep, and I will challenge them to help themselves out even more. Or if the distance is a little long, I will take my leg off and have them naturally cover that ground. Instead of doing, what your instincts are, when it's a little bit long, close your leg. When it's a little bit short, you kind of take your leg off a little bit there. I just try to test them in every single way and try to give them almost kind of an amateur style ride where you just do not support them as much as they have been. And
so, I mean, you ride great, Jimmy. I mean, you really ride great. So this is, you see where you are, way back in the corner. So you're, although it's a manufactured unmanufacturing is what you're doing. But what about for somebody who doesn't know where they are? They need, but they like this idea. Okay. They've hopefully got a good trainer and a ground person. So this is something you want to do maybe in a lesson scenario. How would they start with a line or so that they could kind of count and gauge, or how would you start?
Well, I would also say the takeoff and landing poles would be a huge aid.
Okay.
When you watch somebody like, so Ann Krasinski with the soft feeling, always out of the tack, never forcing a horse to do a certain way and always having a self-carriage, watching someone like that, watch their position, always carrying a neutral seat. You give yourself a takeoff rail and a landing rail. You try to find a little bit of a neutral seat, not a driving seat, not a full-on two-point, but you get yourself out of the tack. Let the rail dictate where the horse needs to take off, and then, give them a little bit of support. Also, challenge them a little bit. Instead of doing 10 feet, do 12 feet, or, 10 feet, go to 9 feet for the takeoff rail. Vary drastically between the distances with 3 to 4 feet in the difference. If you can't find the distance or if you don't trust yourself, then help yourself to take off or landing pole where the horse has to pay attention. You really have to have a good ground person to help you gauge when the time is right, whether you shorten up the landing rail or you lengthen the takeoff rail. It's a very big thing, having a great ground person and helping you with that.
Oh, it's crucial. I love the rails. That's smart. Yeah. Because then that's the thing is, okay, we always want to grow and get better as riders, but it's a partnership. You have to think about your horse, how can you help them? He didn't get the memo, that we all had the conversation and today we're going to start underriding and you're going to start finding your own distances. So you have to sort of explain it to them kindly through your exercise. And that's brilliant. The poles, the line.
Well, absolutely. And I don't ever believe that it needs to be too much. I don't believe that you have to do 5 bounces in a row or you know, 6 1 strides or anything insane. I truly believe in the development that I had and the time that I sort of had with Frank, as short as it was, we never did. And I say never, we never did anything too extravagant or too detailed. It was very basic and it was very natural with the horses and always about the feeling and judging the horse's mind and allowing them to figure themselves out. It's a very, very fine line that you have to walk. And I really feel that you battle, you know, nature versus nurture when trying to get a horse from Europe and developing them into, you know, a little bit of a natural eye. It's not the easiest thing in the world. I believe the easiest thing in the world is to have one from the beginning and teaching them from the time you first get on them at 3 years old till, you know, to the young horse development years and allowing them to develop that natural eye. And I can't say enough about that with Frank and the horses that he's developed. I mean, I don't need to say anything other than the two words, Jim Twist. Yep. You know, that's a horse that proves that with a natural eye, they can do anything. With 3 different riders, he was Horse of the Year.
Totally.
And, you know, went to the Olympics and won the countless Grand Prix and probably the best show jumper horse that we've ever produced here in the States.
It's true. Well, this is sort of the dawn of the American breeding movement. I mean, my Facebook newsfeed is filled with people who are breeding, even one in single horses. Yeah. So this is the chance. People are going to have to start really thinking about our program in this country and how we get to where we want to get, literally from like halter broke.
Exactly. And it'd be interesting to see how we start developing horses.
Totally.
I don't get me wrong. I credit the Europeans and everything they do. They can produce amazing results. But the style of riding that we have here is not conducive to what they do. I mean, it's illegal for them to do anything more than a loose rein snaffle at 5 years old. And there are theories and their ideas of how to develop a horse and the way they jump are a little bit different than what we have here in the States. It would be very interesting over the next coming years to see what the young horses we produce, you know, can bring to the Grand Prix ring.
Absolutely. Well, you guys check it out. As you can hear, this is why we wanted Jimmy on air. He is extremely knowledgeable, got great insight, ridden with tons of different riders and programs around the world and country. You guys can check him out online. He does training and riding, but also sales. So if you're looking for something that's already been Americanized, you can check him out at stonehorsefarmct.com. All uploaded. You keep up with that, huh? Your website, Jimmy?
Yes, I try my best. And
it looks good.
A little bit of computer coding class on the side. I try to keep up with that. So
it shows. I was like, hey, now, Jimmy's website is the real deal. It's awesome. Very cool. Well, thank you so much for talking with us. We're going to get you on another episode.
Welcome to bedinabox.com, where you'll find the most comfortable, pressure-relieving memory foam mattress at only 1/3 the cost of the leading brands. We have created an exclusive memory foam that sleeps cooler, rebounds quicker, and cradles your body in pain-relieving comfort, better than other types of memory foams. Introducing our new memory foam technology. By swirl-infusing gel into our advanced memory foam, we have created an even cooler, more comfortable sleeping surface. Best of all, it's made right here in the USA.
He had been dealing with back pain and chiropractor visits for a while, so we decided it was probably time to find a new mattress.
So we started doing some research on memory foam mattresses and found bedinabox.com. We were on a trip with some friends, and they actually had a bedinabox mattress in their camper. And on their recommendation, we decided to get one for ourselves.
They got it to us in no time. We had no problem adjusting, and we were thrilled with the comfort. In fact, my husband doesn't have to get up early anymore due to back pain. He can lie in bed for as long as he likes without any discomfort. We recommend Bed in a Box to anyone who has back problems or just needs a good night's rest.
We believe we have created the world's best memory foam mattress. Using independent, accredited labs, we have tested our mattresses against the industry leaders to ensure comfort and durability. Test results show our mattresses relieve pressure better than the more expensive ones found in retail stores. Buying a mattress over the internet may seem risky. That's why we offer a 120-day zero-risk return policy. You get a full 100% refund if you're not satisfied. no hidden fees, and no return shipping charges. And we back them with a 20-year warranty. Sound too good to be true? Don't take our word for it. Read what real customers are writing about us on Facebook, Twitter, Viewpoints.com, and other third-party review sites. We are dedicated to quality and service. We offer fast, free shipping to the contiguous U.S. Your mattress will arrive conveniently packaged and will be ready to sleep on within minutes. With the benefits of the leading brand mattresses, but at one-third the cost, why wait? Start getting the best sleep of your life. Call, chat, or email one of our friendly customer care agents to learn why 99% of our customers sleep better and toss and turn less on their new bed-in-a-box mattress.
We have our next guest that's coming on is actually somebody that I just stumbled into at the horse show the other day, which I was like, wow, there's a cowboy at the horse show. What's going on? Hey, so we started talking. He was actually one of my friends. And as it turns out, I've been hearing about him for the last year or two because he's been helping a friend of mine get her baby started. She's been doing a little bit of breeding and, you know, he'd come with all these rave reviews. So I met him face to face and was like, you know what, this is awesome. This is somebody who's got a background in horses, a little bit natural horsemanship, some dressage, you know, riding, all of this. And he is targeting our community and others, but, you know, we are in need, truth be told, of some horsemanship. We have people who are breeding, people are in the economy, they're buying young horses, things are going awry out there on many different levels. So this was very refreshing to see somebody. We've got Cliff Shedd is here from Common Thread Horsemanship. Cliff, welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me today, guys.
I'm so glad this worked out. This is super. So, I mean, it was such a breath of fresh air, honestly. So I think just not many people know you because you're sort of new. Is that correct? Into the show jumping community?
I am. I was actually born into a hunter jumper family. My uncle is both a trainer and a judge. My mom rode and showed for years, but I took a long hiatus from that when I was really just still a kid. I went out west. I worked for ranches and really great horsemen throughout the west, and just kind of got away from it for a while. But I realized that there's such a need for what I offer in this world that it really made sense with my foundation behind me to come back to this.
That's so nice to hear. Yeah, because it you know, it is very much like that. You don't want to be like, oh, you know, have it a negative, people are mismanaging their horses or whatever. But the reality is, in a positive light, is that people have to put so much emphasis on the competition side of things. There's a lot that goes into building a top horse, perfecting the inside turn, you know, learning how to, if it swaps off or it bulges its shoulder, whatever, there's a million different things. And so people get very focused on that 60 seconds in the ring and the horse doesn't load on the trailer. It stands up when you pull its mane, you know, like whatever, there's all these other behavioral issues because there's not emphasis on that. And there needs to be because they do all go together. So tell us a little bit about how you got started. Like, what has been your experience with these horses?
You know, I think that for me, horses are horses, regardless of discipline. One of the reasons that I call my business Common Thread Horsemanship is because I've really come to learn and find that good horsemanship is just good horsemanship, regardless of the saddle that you're using, the breed of horse that you're riding, the competition that you're entered in. And it really does come down to some really fundamental things. And one of the things that I run into in the show world is that I find a lot of horses are literally, they're just stuck. They're behind the leg. People are kind of begging them to move forward. They're not getting the impulsion that they need, whether it be to get to a jump or in the dressage world. And so that's one of the biggest things I find is just getting these horses lighter, softer, getting them to free up. And this benefits not only the young ones, but it benefits the campaigners as well. You know, I think that when you do the same thing with a horse repetitively, they start to figure out how to get by, kind of giving as little as possible. And so that's one of the big things that I run into here. You know, I mean, overall, this world is full of great horsemen and women both that are really doing a great job getting these horses to do amazing things. My goal is to come in and just try to enhance that relationship between horse and rider, try to get these horses so that they're softer, lighter, happier. And that's really my goal there and kind of what I see a need for.
And is your sort of focus, would you prefer to be able to get to these horses and programs and trainers, say when they're like, if you've got, there's quite a few people, a lot of people, and even small operations that are breeding these days. I mean, just maiden voyage, they're not quite sure what they're doing, and they've, you know, breeding, they've got a mare that they loved and a stallion that they saw and whatever, they've got these babies.
Right.
So do you think that that's sort of like, you know, a benefit to be able to get to these programs and these babies when they're young? Or are you seeing that, you know, you can be effective even popping into a program where there's a 12-year-old horse that's maybe regressing and having some issues? Or what are you seeing for,
right,
for your consistency out there?
I look at so much of what I do as fundamentals and foundation. And I think that anybody that builds or does anything would tell you that you can't really build a great house on top of a poor foundation. And so, you know, absolutely, when it comes to the young horses, I really love to set these horses up for success, to give them, you know, that foundation that you can always come back to later on as that horse develops. And, you know, a lot of people talk about breaking and this and that, and I really look at it as development. It's young horse development. Everything that we do with a horse, every time we put our hands on it, we're either training it or untraining it. And so I really like to look at, you know, the first, you know, 60 or 90 days of a horse's life as a really great time to instill some lifelong lessons in that horse that are really going to come back to help him later on. That being said, as far as the older horses, the 12-year-old horse that's maybe rearing or bucking or doing something like that, I do love to get my hands on those horses because a lot of times it's a pretty easy fix, and it usually just requires a bit of thinking outside the box and, you know, maybe helping to strengthen the foundation on that horse. The really neat thing about horses is that they are so adaptable that even if you don't necessarily have the best foundation behind the 12-year-old, you can teach him and show him a lot of things with a little bit of patience and a little bit of time. So it's quite rewarding either way, but I do love the babies.
That's nice. I have a passion for the babies too. I love them. So talk to me about that. What is sort of your philosophy? You're getting started, the developmental process. Talk to me about that when you're backing the bridle. I mean, what sequence are you going in, or do you have sort
right
of a feeling, you know, like you and I talked briefly about backing with
yes,
the saddle,
ma'am,
versus not. So little things like that, you know, what do you want to share about that?
Sure. I think that, you know, it's kind of like the saying that, you know, if you want to hear God laugh, tell him your plans. And it's kind of the same with horses. You know, is that I really find that watching other guys in the past, you know, that have come before me that have had programs, or, you know, they had this direct line way of thinking where they said, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do this with every horse. And, you know, it worked for maybe 80% of the horses, but there were 20% that style wasn't reaching. So I try to treat every horse like an individual. I mean, I do have, you know, I do have a philosophy, and I do have an idea of what I want to do with each horse. But I do, you know, some horses, some of these babies that I start, the first ride is bareback. I just, you know, I get them pretty good with me crawling up on them and stuff like that. And then, you know, before you know it, I'm sitting on a bareback, and it's a really low stress way for them to get started. Others, there's just a ton of time and groundwork that goes in before they're even going to allow the saddle on. So for me, I try not to get too hung up on my own agenda, because I think that, you know, a really great horseman is one that listens to the horse and then adjusts to the horse. And that's really what I try to do with these youngsters, is try to adjust to what they need. But
totally.
But that being said, I am really progressive. I think that sometimes we spend a lot of time, you know, waiting and begging a horse to do something unnecessarily, when if we just go for it and we just kind of, you know, move forward, set the pace, be the leader. And it's that is the key component here, is that horses seek a leader. They're herd animals. They're instinctively, they're looking to follow someone or something. So that, you know, that's really the main thing that I try to establish right away, is that I can control their feet, where their feet go, forward, backward, laterally. I can control the speed of their feet. And we do this in the round pen. We do it at the end of the lead rope. And we just get that horse to understand that, you know, they need to respect our space. They need to respect the fact that I can move them And once you really have that, you start to really have the horse's mind. So that's kind of my program there with the youngsters.
It's very refreshing. It's for sure the individuality of the horse is such a factor, and that is a bit lost, I think, when people are so busy and they have huge programs. I mean, there are people coming down here with 40, 50, 60 horses more. I mean,
oh yeah,
but
oh,
more. Yeah. You've been here. So there,
yes,
it's very hard to look at a sea of horses like that and manage them individually, although they all need,
yeah,
to be managed individually. They are their own personality,
yeah,
and conformation and all of that. So that's very refreshing. I think really you're onto it. Just talking to you, I can really see kind of where you're coming from, and you're right on. You're going to definitely make a business here. So how can we get the word out? Where can people kind of get a hold of you? Do you have a website? Are you going to be down here for the whole circuit? Give us a little ear on that.
You know, it's funny, true to a lot of cowboys, I haven't gotten too embroiled in the website thing, although I am working on one now, because I've been told that's an important thing to have in this world. So I am working on that. Most of, you know, I've stayed probably busier than I can handle up north. I've been based out of Long Island for the past few years now, and I've been super busy up there. I do really want to expand to this part of the world. And, you know, everything has been really word of mouth, but, you know, people can get a hold of me. They can look me up on Facebook. That's really been a great tool for me. I've got a Common Thread horsemanship page. I also use my personal page as a business page. And so that's a great way to start,
okay.
You know, and, you know, that's kind of the best way to get a hold of me right now.
And so are you freelancing? What's your situation? Are you taking horses in on training? Or I know you did some saddle breaking or starting, how you're calling it, for a couple top stud farms. So that's freelance, but what's the other deal?
Yes. Yes. I primarily freelance. I've been freelance for the past few years now. Although I do refer back to my mentors quite a bit. I try to go and ride with them as much as possible, but yeah, it's all freelance. Down here, I am eventually, you know, if things really take off, I really hope to maybe set up a small farm here where I can take young horses in. And that's kind of what I'm looking at.
Well, there you have it, everybody. Thanks again to our sponsors who made this podcast possible, Bed in a Box, and our auditors. Learn how you can become an auditor and help support Horse Radio Network programming by going to horsesinthemorning.com and clicking on the Become an Auditor banner in the center of the page. Find the links to today's guests and the show notes at horsesinthemorning.com. And you can follow Horses in the Morning on Facebook. Just search Horses in the Morning. You can follow Horse Radio Network on Twitter at Horse Radio. And you can have every single one of your favorite Horse Radio Network shows with you wherever you go by downloading the free, that's right, free Horse Radio Network app for iPhone or Android. You can go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network. And if you miss a live show, you can always listen to the recorded version right here on the website, horseradionetwork.com, on our affiliates, or you can get it on iTunes. You'll never need to miss an episode. Glenn and Jamie will be back again tomorrow with more horsey hijinks. So until then, go ride your horse!